This is Trainer Talk on HRRN Live. HRRN
Live. But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Saver wins the Derby for Top Pletcher.
The Salt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And dialed in, never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Presented by Basic Tipton. Now, here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Good afternoon once again, everyone, and welcome to Trainer Talk presented by Phasic Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, yes, alongside my colleague, my usual entry mate, Jude Feld, Pontiff of the Pick Four, our producer Lee Delapina in our Lexington, Kentucky studios for this Trainer Talk show, our customary featured event each and every Wednesday night, and we do welcome everybody just joining us across the country on Sirius Channel 93. And for those of you who have been with us for the past few hours with our live racing coverage from Saratoga and Del Mar on XM 209, welcome back to the program. And of course, always a very warm welcome to everybody tuning in worldwide with our live streaming on our website at horseracingradio.net. And Jude, A bit of a different type of Trainer Talk show tonight. Typically, we get a chance to catch up with the likes of the Todd Pletchers of the world and the Bill Motts of the world. But tonight, our Rising Star edition with a couple of rookie trainers, if you will.
Yeah, it's really exciting. These are going to be two people that have really just started their careers and obviously have had some recent success. And we're going to put some faces with the names and hear about their stories.
Michael Dilger is going to be our guest in the first half of the show. Karen Headley will be here with us in the second half from California. So we're going to get right to it. It's a busy hour on Trainer Talk presented by Phasic Tipton. And Michael Dilger joining us from the Spa. He is a native of Ireland. And believe it or not, he's only had 16 career starters to date, but three of those have been winners, including the winner of the Grade 2 Sanford Stakes this past weekend, Wired Brian. Michael, thanks so much for joining us on Trainer Talk.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, happy to have you with us here tonight. And, your first starter at Saratoga, your first stakes starter, and now your first stakes winner. It's an easy game, right?
It certainly seems like it.
Are you still on cloud nine?
It's just been a fantastic weekend, and it was a great day for us. And the dust starting to settle now, and we've come back down and had a couple of full days at work. So I'd say we're back to normal by now.
Could you have scripted a better start to your career?
I guess if I had won with my first ever runner, that might have been a little bit better. But this was, certainly a fantastic start. I mean, we couldn't have scripted anything better. And we had some publicity before the race as well. A couple of people latched on to my, having worked for Todd beforehand or whatever. And so there were a couple of articles out there before the race. So, no, we really couldn't have scripted it. It was fantastic.
How much pressure does that put on you, being a former Todd Pletcher assistant, people expecting you to fit into that mold of winning pretty much every race you're running at Saratoga?
I don't think it's so much working for Todd. It's training racehorses. If you're not winning, you're no good. So, there's always pressure to win. I think that's just part of the game.
Michael, has the phone been ringing off the hook from new clients over the past couple of days since that big win in the Sanford?
We've had a few inquiries, so, we have 18 horses at the moment. It'll be nice to get some more, but I'd like to hopefully grow at a steady pace, rather than balloon, if you know what I mean.
As I mentioned, you're a native of Ireland, and obviously horse racing very prominent in Ireland. Talk about your background and how you kind of got started in the game.
Both my parents are involved with horses and in horse racing. Even goes back further than that. My grandmother was a veterinarian. My grandfather was a jockey in Ireland. So it's just always been part of my life and something that I've always, you know, dreamt of doing and wanted to do.
Were there certain people or trainers in Ireland that you looked up to, or maybe even American trainers that you looked up to as a kid?
You know, I mean, everybody, you know, we grew up watching Vincent O'Brien and his exploits, and, you know, I mean, there are plenty of idols out there for sure. I was part of the first intake of people onto the Darley Flying Star program. You know, that gave us a sort of a worldwide insight into the business. We got to travel a lot while we were on the course. And during that time, I worked with Owen Harty out in California and Gay Waterhouse in Australia, and spent some time with John Gosden in England as well. So those were three, you know, great opportunities for me to see some very different styles of training.
Yeah, the Darley Flying Star program is such a unique program, and it's so well-rounded, not only from the horsemanship standpoint, from the business standpoint. Talk about that a little bit and what kind of an influence that's been for you.
You know, it was, I had finished school. At the end of my schooling, I went on to college, and I studied business and Japanese in Dublin. And I had just completed that course, and the Flying Start was just in its first year. They were just, you know, advertising for their, looking for their first applicants. And I was sort of at a crossroads. I didn't know what I was going to do. You know, I knew I wanted to work with horses. I knew I was probably going to have to leave Ireland. So we, you know, made the decision to apply for the course and got on it. And that took care of the next 2 years of my life. You know, we started in Ireland. Then we went on to England, from there on to America for 6 months. Then we spent 6 months in Australia, and I think a four-month stint in Dubai, and then it was back to England. So, you know, it is a fantastic opportunity for anybody who gets the chance. I think it was especially great for us because we were the first bunch of 12, and, you know, even the coordinators were learning as they went along, and it was just, you know, to have all those doors open to you as a young person and to get to meet all these influential people who've been successful and know what they're doing, it just opens your eyes, I suppose, to, you know, the possibilities that are out there.
Yeah, that's very well said. And Jude and I, over the past several years, have had opportunities to do some speaking engagements with the Darley Flying Start program entrance, and it's always a lot of fun to speak with the group and talk to them about what we do. But that's the one thing about the program, Michael, you're exposed to so many different aspects of the business. Was there ever any thought on your part that, hey, maybe I want to do something else and not be a horse trainer?
No, I suppose is the answer. No.
Yeah.
I mean, we worked on farms and, you know, on the breeding side and stuff like that. And I had some of experience of that before I went in the course. And, you know, the training is so, you know, your fate can change between tracks open here from 5:30 to 11. You know, your whole world can change in those few hours every day. It's, I just never felt that excitement working on the farms. It never gave me the same buzz. So I have to say that I always, you know, once I got a taste for this, I knew this is what I wanted to do.
It's one of those things where it gets in your bloodstream kind of, and, you know, you, of course, with your family background dating all the way back to your grandparents, I mean, it's such a part of your life. You can't imagine doing anything else, probably.
No, and even when I was, I mean, the hardest few years of my life were probably when I was in college studying, and, you know, it took me 6 years to do a four-year course. I was distracted plenty by horses and other things, and, if it wasn't for my mother, I probably wouldn't have completed it. It was always going to be horses.
How'd your mom keep you on track through all of that?
I got so close to the end. She said, you've put in your time for now. She said, you got to keep going. You got to get it done, and you got to walk away with a piece of paper that says you did it. It's no point saying to people that you went to college but didn't finish. She said, you're just a dropout then. And in fairness to her, a year later, I was on the Flying Star course, and she was right. If I hadn't completed my studies, I wouldn't have gotten the course, I'm sure.
Yeah, let that be a lesson to the kids that are listening out there. Listen to your mother.
Well, she's not always right.
Michael, you said that your parents are both involved in the sport as well. Talk about that.
Yeah. My brother and I grew up, my parents have a small farm. They mostly international hunt horses and fox hunting and show jumping, kids have hobbies when they grow up. We grew up riding horses, and that was our life, and that's what we love to do. And it was never a sacrifice to find the time to do it. That was just our gig. My dad buys and sells a lot of horses, so we were quickly aware of the financial side of buying and selling, and the importance of making sure your judgment is correct, and the downside of that if you get it wrong. So I think from a very early age, we were both schooled in the importance of being right.
Talking with trainer Michael Dilger on this Trainer Talk edition presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Michael, a couple of the names that you mentioned when you first did get into training, Owen Hardy, John Gosden, obviously very prominent names. Talk about those years and some of the things that you took away from working with them.
Well, they were all part of the Flying Star course. So to be honest, they were very brief visits. I think we spent a month and a half maybe with Owen, maybe a month and a half or 2 months with John Gosden, and then I think it was a similar stint with Gay Waterhouse. But, the fantastic part of the course was that we were, immediately let into the inner circle and, aware of decisions that were being made. And, they took the time to explain some of the things they were doing, I think that was the advantage of doing it through the Flying Star course. I think if you go to work somewhere, you have to put in a lot more time before you're allowed into that inner circle or made aware of what the bigger picture of what's going on with the horses and what's going on in the stable as a whole. Working for Owen in California, that was my first introduction to the racetrack in America and the racetrack life and what it entailed. That was a great experience for us. We were based at Santa Anita at the time, and it was just an eye-opening experience.
I think everybody that trains horses should have to spend a few days with John Gosden in his office, listening to him talk to owners. I know when I trained horses, I would sit in John's office and just listen to him discuss horses with his clients, and I learned so much about how to handle clients from him. Talk about that and how good he is with his customers.
He's a very, very intelligent man, and like you say, he's very articulate. He's someone that people within the industry seem to go to if they need a spokesperson. He's quite a remarkable man, and he certainly, he knows how to deal with people. Yeah, he's he's just a very, very good speaker.
Michael, we mentioned that you spent 7 years working with trainer Todd Pletcher as his assistant. Were there other trainers before Todd came along that you were able to learn from beside Owen Hardy, John Gosden, in the Flying Start program, or was Todd your first job outside of that?
When I completed the Flying Start course, I spoke with several people, and You know, I have a cousin, Jerry Dilger, who has Drumolan Farm in Lexington. Also Mike Ryan, bloodstock agent Mike Ryan. And, you know, they had sort of helped me along, and I had to ask their, you know, their advice on who I should go to work for. And Todd was one of the names that came up. So I came over and worked at July Sale at Phasic Tipton, and I flew up to Belmont to meet Todd. That was in July, obviously, and I went to work for him in December. America compared to Europe, the transition to being a trainer is from assistant is not as financially taxing. I mean, you buy your equipment, you have your horses. All you need to do then is convince the racing secretary to give you stalls, and you're in business. At home in Ireland, I would have had to either rent facilities or buy facilities and be saddled with a huge mortgage straight away. And for that reason, you know, it made more financial sense to come to America to start training. So we felt that Todd would be a good place for me to go and start. That was why we came here. but I had worked very little in Ireland beforehand. You know, I'd worked for a couple of smaller trainers, and I'd actually spent a couple of summers working in Japan while I was in college. And I think we just all knew I was going to end up in America.
Let's say I hit the $160 million Powerball tomorrow, and I've got all this cash, and I want to get some horses. Why should I hire Michael Dilger to be my trainer?
Why should you hire Michael Dilger to be your trainer?
That's like putting you on the spot.
Kidding. $160 million.
don't get the cart before the horse.
You're only getting just a fraction of that.
Yeah, I'm only getting a fraction. You got to tell me how much you're going to spend on horses first.
Well, knowing me, considerable amount of that's going. Part of it's going to Bessemer Trust, and the rest is going to horses.
Yeah. Well, I guess, you know, we're young and we're enthusiastic and we're just starting out, so you know we're going to be trying very hard. And we haven't had too many runners, but what we've, you know, brought over to compete with have done well. During my time with Todd, I spent a lot of time at the sales working for him, you know, at the two-year-old sales in the spring. So I'd like to think I have somewhat of an eye to buy a horse. I certainly enjoy spending some of that $160 million. it would be a fantastic opportunity to go to the sales with that kind of bankroll, you know.
Yeah, is that what you like to do, is buy yearlings or that type of thing, or do you like to look for European horses, or what do you like to do as far as getting horses to run on the turf, or you like 2 year olds? What's the story?
Right now, we have of the 18 horses, I think 12 of them are 2 year olds, and we should have some of them starting over the next month. So the people looking in, it might look like all we have is 2 year olds, but that's what we focused on. But for the moment, we can only train what we have, and that's what we have. What kind of horses do I like? I like nice horses. I like horses like Wired Brian, you know?
Grade one, grade two.
Everybody likes runners.
Yeah. I mean, they come in all shapes and sizes, and they can come from anywhere. It's for me, you know, you put a lot of time in with the horses, and owners spend a lot of money. And I think you have to make sure that you've got a good horse that's worth the time, worth the effort, and worth the financial investment. If they're not, it can just make for a sour relationship with everybody and a lot of wasted time and money. One of the things that I enjoyed most working for Todd was In February, I would head to Ocala, and I would be there for the Mark sale, and then we would take care of the Phasic Tipton sale down at Palm Meadows, and then those were two fantastic sales to work. You know, and Todd had some, or has had and continues to have some great success buying horses at those sales, and that was a great learning experience for me. I would be up there for maybe 3 weeks at a time in Ocala. You know, a couple of weeks before the sales, watching horses work and watching their previews, and then watching them on breeze day, and you know, those were like I say, it was a great time to look at horses, and it was something that I learned a lot in doing, you know.
Yeah, Michael, you said that you like nice horses, was your exact way to describe it. There were no shortage of nice horses when you were working with Todd Pletcher, so maybe in that respect you were a little bit spoiled being around all those good horses. Talk about a couple of the horses that you had the opportunity to work with when you were working with Todd that are really going to stand out to you.
Certainly working for Todd is being spoiled, and it is a surreal experience. And you know, the year I went to work for him, we were in Palm Meadows, and the office, you know, if you stood in the office, I think you went down to the 8th or 9th stall before you saw a horse that wasn't a Grade 1 winner. You know, the likes of English Channel were there at the time, and Shadow had just left when I went to work for him. You know, Rags to Riches was a huge, you know, just a fantastic filly. For me personally, I mean, some of the horses I was around that I got to spend time with, and you know, there were sort of individual victories or whatever. When he first gave me a string to train on my own, I went to Chicago, and Pleasant Strike, you know, he won his allowance race, and then he won the Arlington Classic, and he certainly was that was my first stakes winner that I could say that I was around, you know. And then APR, when he won the Clare, you know, I hadn't seen Todd for a couple of months, and it was the first time he, you know, shook my hand and said, you know, well done, great job, you know, that was a big day for me and a big thrill, you know, for that horse to win that race. And I suppose latterly towards the end, I mean, last year when Love and Pride won the won up here at Saratoga, you know, that was a great day for us because we'd had her in Delaware for most of the summer. And she'd run in the Obia, I think. So it's, but there were so many good horses. It was a fantastic place to learn how to, deal with good horses.
Do you still get on your own horses?
No. Yeah, obviously haven't seen me for a while.
No, I haven't. So I haven't seen you since a party at La Rosa's one time when you were in Darley Flying Star. It's been a long time.
But Michael, believe it or not, just a few minutes left here before we have to wrap things up. Karen Headley coming up on the second half of Trainer Talk, this Rising Star edition. Back to Wired, Brian, your Grade 2 Sanford winner for just a moment. How many text messages and phone calls did you have on your phone right after that victory?
More than I've ever had before.
Who was the first?
I looked at one stage and there was 68, and that was before I started. They went in waves. It just kept accumulating. I would answer a few and then more would come.
In about 2 minutes or less, what is the story behind Wired Brian?
He's a homebred of Anstews. He's by Stormy Atlantic. He's a very mature colt. He's a February foal. And he's New York bred. And very exciting horse for us. And just unbelievably lucky to have him in my first year of training. I wouldn't be talking to you if I didn't have him.
Not necessarily so. But we always ask trainers what they like to do on their day off. I know when you're starting out, you don't have many of those, but you have any hobbies or anything?
No hobbies. Horse racing.
Spoken like all the true greats. Bill Mott said the same thing. many of the trainers that have come on the show, Kieran McLaughlin, they're just focused on getting the job done on the racetrack. And you've certainly done that, Michael. You're off to a tremendous start. Congratulations on that big Sanford victory. And really, really appreciate you joining us here on Trainer Talk tonight. And all of our guests who appear on the show are going to receive gifts from EPO Equine and from Flair Equine Nasal Strip. So we will get those to you. And we're going to look forward to catching up with you here in Saratoga in the next week or so.
Great. Thanks very much, guys.
All right. Thanks, Michael. Keep it rolling.
All right.
Michael Dilger, our special guest in the first half of the show. And again, somebody who is not a household name yet, but he does come from that Todd Pletcher trainer tree. Kieran McLaughlin, Dallas Stewart, so many great trainers coming from, well, I guess they're Dwayne Lucas disciples, but you could still kind of make the parallel coming to Todd Pletcher. And now Todd sending out more top trainers.
It's the trickle down.
Yeah.
And, you know, great experience working for a guy like Todd that has that many quality horses. You know the guy's going to be able to handle the top class horse, so that's a plus.
Only 18 horses, 16 starters. He already has a grade two winner. Now, you won with your very first horse, right?
I won with my first horse. It was his second start. I finished third, and then I won.
Okay.
Second start, he won.
Not a grade two.
Not a grade two. No, actually, it was a 12-5 claimer at Santa Anita, at Oak Tree, actually. Jeff Siegel and Richard Portolan owned him, and Deddy Dalhousie rode him.
Looking forward to the second half of the show. Karen Headley, the daughter of Bruce Headley, going to be here with us to talk about her career. She got off to a flying start, no pun intended,
yep,
a couple of weeks ago.
She's won her first race and well on her way. Very sharp gal.
All right, Karen is up next. The second half of Trainer Talk coming up on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Stay tuned. This is all presented by our friends at Phasic Tipton.
The Phasic Tipton Saratoga Sale.
Midnight Lucky.
Freedom Child.
Plum Pretty.
Union Rags.
Honey Proposition.
Black Onyx.
Guilt Trip.
Ranked number one by percentage of grade one stakes winners, graded stakes winners, and stakes winners among North American yearling sales. It's the Saratoga Sale, August 5th and 6th, beginning at 7 p.m. For more information, visit phasictipton.com and get your next graded stakes winner at the Saratoga Sale. EPO Equine, the all-natural, healthy, safe, and legal blood builder, would like to extend a special congratulations to Nick and Martha Gonzalez and the entire team of this year's Queen's Plate winner, Midnight Aria, as well as Tony Alanya and all the connections of the remarkable Captain Treacherous, winner of the Metro and Meadowlands Pace. To learn more about how EPO Equine can help your equine athlete reach its true potential, contact Joe Valente at 215-501-6880 or visit EPOEquine.com. I'm here with Dr. Jim Chiappetta from Flair, maker of Flair Equine Nasal Strips. Jim, how do Flair strips, when applied to a horse's nose, help protect their lungs?
Mike, studies show that 90% of the resistance to airflow in exercising horses is in the upper airway, with the majority of that being in the nose. When exercising at high intensity, many horses can bleed into their lungs. The strips have been shown to reduce that bleeding by reducing the resistance to airflow through the nasal passages. This keeps horses healthy by keeping their lungs healthier during performance and training.
To learn more, visit flairstrips.com.
Gear up for great summer racing at Saratoga with Daily Racing Form's All-Access Players Package. This complete package includes 40 Saratoga online race cards, plus the 2013 Saratoga Players Guide, DRF game plan for each weekend of the Saratoga meet, plus daily clocker reports. You'll get 40 race cards to use during Saratoga at just $1 each for classic PPs or $1.50 each for formulator PPs, plus a comprehensive 2013 Saratoga Players Guide featuring betting strategies, complete 2012 charts, winners and buyers for the prior two meets, an exclusive top 25 trainer report, in-depth statistics, winning posts, and more. In addition, this special package also includes the DRF game plan report for every weekend of the meet and daily clock reports offering the best betting opportunities at Saratoga and at select tracks around the country. Get the entire Saratoga All-Access Players Package in classic PP format for just $79.95 or in formulator PP format for just $99.95. Visit drf.com/Saratoga Pack to order today.
The Haskell Invitational.
And look at it, Lucky and Martin Garcia romping the Haskell. Coyle and Shackelford to the wire. Here's the finish. Coyle has won the Haskell. And Bob Baffert has won the Haskell again. Painter by four on the wire.
the Grade 1 Haskell Invitational, live from Monmouth Park, Sunday, July 28th, only on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This is Trainer Talk on HRRN Live, presented by Basic Tipton.
Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Jude Feld in studio in Lexington, Kentucky. A fun visit in the first half of the show with trainer Michael Dilger, who, as you heard him say, has 18 horses in training. He's only had 16 starters. He finally picked up his first greatest stakes win. I say finally because his first starter at Saratoga was his first winner at Saratoga, and it was in the Grade 2 Sanford Stakes. So interesting story there. Jude, maybe even more interesting here in the second half of the show in some respects, because Karen Headley is the daughter of Bruce Headley. It's a family affair for sure. We're going to hear that entire story. She's only had 3 starters to date. She has 1 winner already coming earlier this month at Betfair Hollywood Park, 1-for-3, pretty good batting average.
Yeah, that's not too shabby. Maybe she should quit now.
Well, she's only 921 wins behind her dad. And she joins us now on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton. Karen, welcome to the program.
Hello.
How's it going?
Jude, how are you?
Good, good. Great to hear your voice.
So I should quit now, huh?
Quit while you're ahead. Always a good thing in horse racing.
Exactly.
Hey, only 921 behind Pop. You got him in your sights or what?
Oh, well, I've contributed to some of those numbers.
Ah.
So it's all good. I hope so.
Yeah, well, it is very much a family affair. We hear that from several trainers that we have on the program, Karen. Take us back to the beginning, so to speak, and tell us about how you got involved with racing and your entire family and how they've been involved for so many years.
Well, my father first started training in the 50s, and that was when the circuit was going up and down the coast of California. And my mother, who grew up in Berkeley, used to write articles for a little turf magazine, and she came down and was lucky enough to meet him. And they were lucky enough to have me 10 years later. And I always knew what I wanted to be since second grade. And my father, I've just always been around horses. My mother loves horses and my father loves horses, and I've always loved horses. And I kind of wrote out my resume in second grade, exactly what my life plan, which I found a year ago, and it was very amusing because I kind of followed it to a T, except for winning the Kentucky Derby. So that is definitely my main goal.
Yeah, you want to be able to fill that out. Well, your family, kind of California racing royalty. It's like growing up being a kid of Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie as far as the California racing circuit's concerned. That's a tremendous edge for you.
Yeah, well, my parents, I mean, you know they're polar opposites, but somehow they come together really well. And they have, you know, my father's a wild man and my mother's very straight-laced. So I kind of got the best of both worlds with the good work ethics and stuff, but it was kind of fun growing up around, you know, I mean, we all have those black sheeps in the family though, too. Top and bottom.
Right. Who's that, brother Gus?
No, that's another story.
Well, you know, we're always around the track and watching your dad's horses train and all that. But you kind of went off the reservation, so to speak, for a while and moved away and did some other things. What did that teach you about coming back to the racetrack?
Well, I always knew what I wanted to be. And so I never went to college. So I took off to San Francisco to kind of hang out, because if you know my person, Jude, you know me, I'm, you know, I have a little bit of funky in me. So I went up there and just had the best time ever, but I still trained horses with Leonard Shoemaker. So I knew, and then I also procreated. I have a fabulous little boy who's 11 years old. His name is Berkeley. And so I did that, but I always, you know, I always knew what I wanted to be, but I had to go and kind of live a little bit because, as Jude knows, I would always ride the pony every weekend. That was when the laws were a little bit lax, and I'd ride, you know, take down all the horses down to the track, would never be able to go on the track. But, and then as soon as I could, I got my exercise rider's license and then rode for my father forever, and just being around that, because my father, he would, not only is he a breeder, but he would always bring back, he'd go to the Keeneland sales and, of course, Fazek Tipton, and he'd bring back, you know, sometimes 50 horses that he would personally buy with partners. So I got to watch the whole thing where we would, I would ride the mothers. They go, would, you know, they'd be bred to one of his stallions. We'd learn how to break them in the backyard and then also see the horses that he would buy off of confirmation. And so I just got the 360. So I was very, very lucky. And I also got to see all those great, great trainers from, you know, from at the end of a beautiful golden era to train. So I just got really, really lucky at the time that I was kind of starting to ride and all that stuff. So we would learn how to ride in the backyard, breaking horses all the way up to, once you rode that horse in the backyard, you would campaign that horse, whether it would be, you know, a $32,000 claim or up to grade ones. So it was, you got the whole kit and caboodle. So it was great.
Talk about your backyard. Now, when people say that, you know, they're probably wondering, what's she talking about, her backyard? But literally, your house is maybe 2 miles max from Santa Anita in a very big residential area. This is your family home, and your dad kind of bought up property around there. Talk about that operation and how rare that situation is.
Well, it wasn't so rare a long time ago. Even all the people that I went to school with, they always had horses because it was around Arcadia. And so my father bought their house in 62, and then during the early 80s, he bought houses on each side. And now it's not zoned, sadly, it's not zoned for horses anymore, but it's grandfathered in, I think, for now. But when a horse is, he'd breed his horses or anything that came from Kentucky, we would bring 5 horses back, and there's been so many. Kona Gold was, you know, broken back there, and he just has 3 acres. It's basically a postage stamp little breaking and training center, and he believes that you feed to train and train to feed. So he would pump the oats and everything into him, but you'd ride him hard as well, and he would have a pretty good base. But you broke all these horses in the middle of a residential area.
Yeah,
that's not heard of anymore. But he's had all his California champions broken there, a bunch of beautiful horses that, you know, that you guys have probably heard of, you know, Street Boss, Got Coco, all these unbelievable horses that were broken back there. And then from there, what he used to do, which was great, is it send him out to Pomona, because that's a great surface, and to teach him how to change leads and gate work. And then when they'd graduate from the backyard to Pomona, to Santa Anita, because April 1st is when you're allowed to bring in 2-year-olds. So,
Karen,
what we do.
You mentioned the name Kona Gold, your dad's 2000 Breeders' Cup Sprint winner. Did you get a chance to spend much time around Kona Gold?
Oh, I galloped him. Yeah, yeah. He was the smartest, one of the best horses I've ever ridden. He was unbelievable. When you'd work him, he would. When you hit the stretch, if you've driven in a Porsche or anything with a, you know, a V8, you just drop down and go. And that's what he would do. He was just all racehorse. He was one in a million. One in a million to ride.
You are quite an accomplished exercise rider. You never ever got a chance to freelance much or whatever, because your dad kept you pretty busy. But
are you kidding me? Never let me go. Hey, it was cheap labor. You know what? I'm the fool. Is that when I first started galloping for him, I said, "Oh well, I want to buy my first car," and he says, "Oh okay." You know, I said, "Well, you know, Dad, you hold my money, because I want to ride all these horses, and you save my money because I want to buy a brand new car." And because I was kind of a little bit fun in my younger years, I knew that if I didn't have someone holding my money, and that if I got my driver's license after 18, that I would probably, that's why I'm still alive today. So I worked for him for 3 years without a paycheck, and he bought me a $10,000 Volkswagen Jetta. So of course I didn't freelance anywhere.
A true trainer's daughter.
Karen, I spent several years working with my dad back in Massachusetts, and I know there were times when we used to, you know, butt heads and you know, come to odds with each other. What was it like working with your family and working with your dad?
Well, my dad's always been my best friend, and we can fight, and we can yell at each other, but it just ends up turning into a laugh fest, because there's nothing. We have such a good relationship that there's nothing that he can't say to me. We know each other too well. So I can tell him, you know, to go, you know, Jude, how I talk. But, I mean, and he tells me the same, and then 5 minutes later, oh, you want to go to lunch. You know, but that's just the way it is. And I just, every morning, I'm so lucky to wake up and learn something new every day. I think that's where a lot of people get in trouble in this business, is that, you know, especially being a woman too, you walk in to the backside, any woman, it doesn't matter if your father is this or your mother's that, it's like walking into, you know, a lion's cage with meat pants on. So I just really think that, you know, getting along well and if you think you know it all, you're proven wrong in the next set of training that you do. So it's so nice to have someone who's so knowledgeable, and his motto is to keep it simple. And every time I try and almost overthink something, I always think, keep it simple. And that always seems to work. And yeah. What's best for the horse. So.
Yeah, it's great to have Bruce Headley as a role model for that type of thinking. I mean, that's something that trainers go through all the time. And a lot of us revert to people that we've worked for, people that we know. I know there were lots of times, you know, when I was training, I'd think to myself, what would Bobby Frankel do with this horse? And, you know, your father, just amazing. I've learned so many things from your father, just observing what he does when he was breaking horses at Pomona and I was stabled next to him. I'd never seen somebody put four horses in one stall at Pomona before with riders on their back.
I've been in a 12 by 12 stall with five horses, four going one way and the other one going the other way.
Yeah, we talked about it on the radio the other day, actually, with another trainer. I said it was the most amazing thing that I ever saw, and these horses bouncing off one another, green two-year-olds, you know, probably haven't even been to the track yet. And I asked your dad about it, you know, and he said, well, that's how you get horses used to being with one another and not being horse shy. He says, you ever see my horses duck away from another horse on the track? I go, no. He goes, that's why, because we do that with them. And that was something that I learned, and when I was breaking horses later on in Bradbury, that was something that I did that I learned from your dad.
It's great, and they don't kick each other. You teach them how to go, you know, not wheeling. They can't buck, obviously.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's great. It's really, and you know, he is still, he's 79 years old, and he still goes out there, and he's, you know, because he was really ill about 5 years ago, and he's kind of evolved his breaking practices, and he's evolved it into him still being able, because, you know, he's been a workaholic, and he still goes out there and gyps 2-year-olds, and he teaches these young boys how to do it, and he's great, you know.
Yeah, no, he's a great teacher.
And very funny.
Yeah, and he always has the Bruce Headley uniform, which is a pair of jeans and a white T-shirt. I mean, that's his traditional attire it's not freezing cold outside.
Oh yeah, no, you're right. You're right.
Trainer Karen
He's
Headley.
He's a fun man to work around.
Trainer Karen Headley, our special guest on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Karen, you refer to your dad as your best friend, and I can imagine that as special a moment as it was for you winning your first race as a trainer earlier this month, it had to be a tremendous moment for him as well.
Yeah, he was happier than I was.
Really?
yeah. Well, I mean, I think I've gotten more satisfaction out of when I used to gallop. I don't gallop anymore, Jude.
No.
Isn't that sad? No, no. But I just, you know.
Well, you're somebody's mother now.
He's happier than I was.
But it's always great for parents when their kids do something, you know, that they think is great. And I'm sure.
Oh, I'm happy my kid brushes his teeth every day at 11, you know.
Speaking of that, your young son, Berkeley, who you mentioned earlier here in the interview, you said you knew what you wanted to do right from the second grade on. What does Berkeley think about this whole horse racing thing?
Oh, he's going to be a quarterback for the Steelers.
Oh, really?
Oh, well then.
But no. You've just become my favorite trainer, Karen, and your son is now my favorite trainer's son, by the way.
Okay.
Big wow. Steeler fan, Mr. Penna.
I got to meet this kid when we come out to California.
Yes, come out, meet him. He can talk. But I have to buy that red zone every,
Does he have a terrible towel? Because I can bring one for him.
Actually, he has all those fat heads. I love doing my home. I love collecting art and doing that stuff. And in his room are all those fat heads. I have a 5-foot Steelers helmet, Apollo Malo. I have everything in this one room, which,
My wife won't let me put that in the bedroom, but I'm trying to get it.
Well, what's your address? I'll send it to you.
So does he like the horses? Does he like being around them?
Oh, he loves being around them. I mean, he has horses in his backyard, and he loves animals. I mean, he even likes cats, But he loves horses.
Is he a typical Headley kid? Is he getting on the horses and stuff in the mornings?
He's taking riding lessons, which I'm very happy about, because that way you want to talk about arguing. That's what my father and I would kind of argue. Of course, the 19-year-old, I know, So... I'm happy that he's taking riding lessons.
So he's obviously a pretty good football player then.
He can throw the ball and stuff,
That's part of being a quarterback. That's good.
He's better at fantasy football. He'll probably be an odds maker in Vegas. He's better at fantasy football.
Do you think he has any interest in following in mom's footsteps and being a trainer?
I would hope so. He reminds me of some of the things that I talk about with him when I, he's, yeah, I hope so. Hopefully, if they're still racing, when he wants to train,
they'll still be racing. I asked Michael Dilger this question earlier, and I'm going to ask you the same thing. Let's say I hit the Powerball tomorrow for $160 million, and I've got all this money to spend, and I'm going to send $20 million to the Bessemer Trust just to make sure I don't overdo, but I'm going to let you spend the rest of the money. Why should I hire you? Why would I hire Karen Headley as my new trainer?
Why? Because I always look out for the, the best welfare of the horse, and I do not lie, which, Jude, I can't lie. I would never just sit there and say, oh, the horse is going fine when he's not. I'm not scared to tell someone if exactly where I think their horse should be placed. And I'm not scared to tell them map out everything that I want to accomplish with their horse. If I don't feel it's at the level that they think, I have no problem telling someone that. I like to sleep at night. So, and I also know that I can do the best job that I possibly can.
Karen, was it a difficult decision for you to decide to go out on your own and leave your dad?
No. No, I'm still with him.
Okay.
We're still together. I help. No, it's like walking for me, being around horses. So it's easy.
Is it different saddling your own horse than when you were helping dad saddle his?
No. I might put, if we were racing, no. Uh-huh.
And no extra pressure?
No, because most of the horses my dad owns. I look at even we train horses for Golden Eagle. We train horses for Marcia Nafee, Governor Jones, everybody back east. I look at them as my horses because we've usually either broken them in the back. I look at them as our horses, as a family horses. Everybody's equal.
Most trainers that we have on the program at some point will talk about the clients that they've been fortunate to be associated with over the years. And you just mentioned a few highly prominent names. Talk about some of those owners.
Oh, I can tell you
owners.
Who I was most unfortunate to be around. That's no problem. That's easy.
We try to keep the program in a positive light.
Oh, no, it's a positively good one.
Go ahead.
No, I'm fortunate to be around a lot. Yeah, you guys know who I'm talking about, too. And no, I've just been fortunate to be around people who the owners are knowledgeable. Samantha Siegel, love working with her. I've just been so, and I have to answer to a guy who I think knows more than all of us is my dad, So I'm lucky. Very lucky.
Now, how about your brother? He's recorded 17 wins as a trainer. How about him going out on his own, or is he kind of like you? Is he still involved in the operation?
Oh no, he goes. He's out on his own.
Okay. That working out okay?
Yeah, because he's out on his own.
Gus, one of racing's great guys. Always fun to be around, and I enjoy talking to Gus when I get a few minutes. We used to have nice conversations on the beach in Del Mar. I'm gonna miss that this year.
Yes. So, oh, you're not coming out?
No, I'm not gonna be able to. I'm gonna be at Saratoga. So.
Oh, well, that's a bummer.
Yeah.
Karen, we talked about Kona Gold. What some of the other horses that your dad had? I mean, he had Bertrando. He had Street Boss, as you mentioned. Got Coco. Who were some of the other horses that really, you know, hold a special place for you that you had the chance to be around?
Well, the fastest horse that I've ever ridden that was unbelievable, if you ever want to look up her maiden win, and then she went on to win the Santa Paula, was Magnificent. She was absolutely unbelievable, and I think that after her second race, she got a little floating chip in her ankle, so we turned her out down at Rancho Paciano, and that was right during the San Diego wildfires, and her throat basically collapsed, and we tried to bring her out, and she wasn't really a synthetic horse, but if you watch her on the, she was just breathtaking. And I've El Robilar, a Silver Swallow, who I loved. She was always a bridesmaid. Even some of the horses that were just, you know, nothing. They were just. I've just been able to ride some great, great horses. Great horses. I never got to ride Street Boss, but he was great. I had him as a 2-year-old over at Pomona. But we've had some fun horses. But Magnificence is truly. She was unbelievable.
Is there a old hard knock and claiming horse that maybe your family owned or one that your dad trained that had a lot of problems that you guys were able to overcome all the difficulties with him?
Well, I mean, Jude, you remember Soft Shoe Sure Shot?
Sure.
He was that was one that horse taught me a lot. He was one of the first horses that I rode from the time he was a yearling all the way up to where he's. My father has, out of the four horses that are 9-year-old graded stakes winner, he has two of them, and Soft Shoe Sure Shot being one of them, and Kona Gold. But he was kind of at the lower ranks of claiming, so we kind of used him as a rabbit for Bertrando. And all of a sudden, Bertrando was having a harder time in beating him. And he went around to, you know, win some great stake races after that. You know, so but when he has a horse with a problem, if we diagnose it and if the vet says 3 months, he gives him 6 and he brings him back. So that's why we have horses that are like 9 and 10. But he never taps into joints, and he doesn't believe in steroids or any of that stuff. So he's just hay, oats, and water. And if they can't, what they are is what they are. You know, like Got Coco, I remember. She was just, I had to work her 7/8 first thing in the morning, her last 7/8 before her third place finish in the Breeders' Cup. And she was just a horrible workhorse. She just would just plod along. And it was in the, I had to work her in the fog. So my dad stood on the pony at the 7/8 pole. And when I crossed it to start, he whistled at the 7/8 pole. And when I crossed it at the wire, I had to whistle, and that was like it took me 5 minutes to get around there and do that. Cause she was not only being in the fog, but then being, you know, in the dark by herself, and it was just, but then she, in the afternoon, she was just, you know, what she was, she was a great filly.
Yeah, she could really run. Yeah.
And I think that's why my dad has done so well, is because he's had to use his own money, and he hasn't been able to buy these, you know, these high-priced, you know, yearlings and stuff, and so he's been able to buy. And that's why he would always buy on confirmation and with, like, these obscure stallions. And they, you know, it just goes to show you an athlete is an athlete, you know?
Yeah, he's one of those guys that you know, buys late in the sale, late in the book, you know, stands in the back of the ring and looks at horses as they come through. He's not one to particularly, you know, look at the flashy pedigrees and go stall to stall and look at horses. He also buys, you know, very – very typey horses. I mean, you know that it's a Bruce Headley horse when you look at it. You know, he just seems to buy those horses with the big rear ends, the nice engines, the horses that look like they have speed, that look like they have good bone. I mean, he really concentrates on those kind of things.
Oh yeah, big boned. And the other thing that I learned from him when he says he looks at yearlings and stuff, he says as soon as he sees anything, one thing wrong with them over at the knee or anything like that, they're gone. He's not trying to look for excuses. He goes to the next one because he knows, you know, with the thousands of horses that there'll be another one, you know? So that's always good to remember, you know. Don't try and, you know, like he'd always laugh if people were putting their fists in their throat to see if they had good airways, and here's this thing. Although he doesn't mind a pigeon-toed horse that much, you know. One of his fastest fillies that he had was pigeon-toed, so sometimes they, you know. But that was a homebred, so he had to like it.
Yeah, you don't have a choice then.
You know, oh, well, she's all right now, you know. He's just really good. You know how he is with his one-liners, you know. He comes out with that, and it's easier to remember, so.
Yeah, I remember one day Vicky Frontieri was working a horse for him, and he said, Vic, this one is quick. If I were you, I'd leave my stick.
Yeah, he comes up with some of those lines. Oh, yeah.
I've never forgotten that. That's like, that to me, that was one of the classics. That was a great.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And he just, yeah, that's the reason why, I mean, my father and I, we go out, we laugh all day long. You can go to the store with him, and you just, something happens. He's funny. Very funny.
Talking with trainer Karen Headley on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Karen, only about 3 minutes or so left before we have to wrap things up. Believe it or not, it's really flown by. But you started by talking about your goal of winning the Kentucky Derby, and that's the one thing you mapped out in the second grade that has yet to come to fruition for you. What things are you doing to try to make that dream a reality?
Waking up every morning and learning something new every day. No, just learning something, just working, keep working and hoping that your next batch of two-year-olds will bring you something like that, you know? That's all you can do. It's a luck game and you know, knowledge, and that's what. And plus, I want to be the first one to saddle a horse in 4-inch heels, you know?
and looking good doing it. Well, I'll tell you what, when you go to bed tonight, get on your knees and pray that I hit that $160 million Powerball, because it'll be you and me, baby. We'll go right to the Derby.
Thank you, baby. But you know, I told you about that praying, and I'd get hit by lightning, dude. You're trying to save that money.
Well, Karen, we certainly have enjoyed visiting with you, hearing your story. We could have spent another half an hour with you easily, but do have to wrap things up here. All of our guests who appear live on Trainer Talk are going to receive gifts from a couple of our sponsors, EPO Equine and Flair Equine Nasal Strips. So we'll send those out to you. And again, really appreciate you being here. Thanks for taking the time. All the best here in the future. And tell little Berkeley that I said go Steelers.
Yes, thank you so much. And Jude, next time you come up to California, let's go have a cocktail together.
All right, sounds good.
Thanks, Karen.
All right, guys, thank you so much.
All right, Karen Headley, daughter of Bruce Headley, again, picking up her first career winner earlier this month at Betfair Hollywood Park. And as you heard her say, still very much involved in her dad's operation as she has been. I thought it was fascinating when she talked about mapping out her plan, knowing what she wanted to do from the second grade.
Yeah.
The second grade. That's remarkable.
Yeah, no, I think mine was in the seventh grade, so she was 5 years ahead of me. I mean, wait, she's, you know, way younger than I am. But, yeah, I mean, that's – but she grew up in that family, and you know, it was racing royalty in California. I mean, the Headleys, you know, her mother has been very involved in the business in various ways, and her father has trained countless stakes winners. Got to be one of the all-time leading California bred trainers.
Yeah, when I called her and asked her about coming on the show, she immediately lit up when she heard your name. And she said, oh, I consider Jude to be a second father. Pretty
well,
cool.
Well, she's a good girl. I love the Headleys. Bruce and I have the same birthday. We actually had a co-birthday party one time that was an extravaganza.
I can imagine, after hearing some of those stories. Our thanks to Michael Dilger for being with us in the first half of the program and Karen Headley for the second half. If you did miss any portion of this Trainer Talk presented by Fasic Tipton, you can go to our website later on tonight. Check out a podcast, horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. We're back tomorrow, where this segment from 6 to 7 will be the BristNet.com call-in show. So join us then, 3 to 7 Eastern. For our producer, Lee Delapina, Jude Feld, I'm Mike Pena. We'll talk to you next time.
Good night, Barbados.